Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.
Good evening, fight fans. Here we are, our second episode of the 2-Minute Round, your quick look at the female fight world. I am your co-host, Felipe León, from FightNews.com and also from In the Square Circle here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. And with me on the line, as always, our co-host, the man of the hour, David Avila. How are you doing, David?
Good, Felipe. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for asking. Busy week this week. And also on the line, our other co-host who, unfortunately, last time in our first episode couldn't be with us, but we're very happy to have her here. And Liz Quevedo-Parr, why don't you say hi to all the fight fans listening in and kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. Don't be modest. Tell us about your accomplishments in the boxing world, and that way people can get to know who you are, or if they already do, remember a little bit more about you.
Sure. Hi, Felipe. Hi, David. It's good to be on. I competed for a long time. I started boxing in 1999. I did win 4 consecutive USA national titles and I think 1 or 2 other titles that I can't remember at the moment because it's been so long. I did have 1 pro fight in 2007 and I won, but I decided that at the time it wasn't convenient actually to just continue with a pro career, that seeing as though women's fighting had kind of, you know, stalled a little bit. And so I've been training people to box, and right now I'm managing a gym in Long Beach, and I train some of the kids and a few of the adults. And so at the moment, that's what I'm doing right now.
Awesome. So like I mentioned at the top of the hour, this is the 2-minute round, your hooks and jabs look on the female fight world. And we've had some action from the last time that we were on the air, which was a couple of weeks ago. We actually have some fight results for you guys, and we're going to be opening the phone lines if anybody is listening live, but as well you can listen to the podcast tomorrow morning on the Leave It in the Ring Network. But the line, the phone number that you can call live to speak to myself or Mr. David Avila or Mrs. Liz Quevedo-Parr is 347-215-7598. Again, I'm going to repeat it. It's 347-215-7598. Let's go ahead to the fight results. And on Friday, March 11th, from Edmonton, Canada, we had a pretty good fight, a little bit controversial, but we saw some titles change hands when Jelena Miranovic from Canada captured the WBC and WBA featherweight titles with a unanimous decision over Soledad Matisse, the sister of Lucas Matisse. Last August, actually, Jelena had traveled down to Argentina to face Soledad in a unification bout, with Jelena being the WBC champion and Soledad a WBA champion. And Soledad ended up winning a unanimous decision there, David, or was it a majority decision down there in Argentina? I don't quite remember.
You got me there. I think it was unanimous.
So then Soledad ended up winning a unanimous decision in her whole hometown of Argentina, but Jelena returned the favor on March 11th and winning a unanimous decision. Yeah, it was a unanimous decision, and winning a unanimous decision in Canada, where Soledad met the canvas in the 10th round. David, I watched the fight. I sent you the link. I'm hoping you watched the fight. I'm pretty sure you did. What'd you think of that fight? Because it's a little bit controversial.
You know, it's funny because I thought the decision was fair, but it was a lot. Well, it could have gone the other way very easily, very, very easily. It's one of those things where if you go back to Argentina, then Matisse is going to win. They go to Canada, then Berdjanovic is going to win based on the judges, because the judges see what they want to see. What did you think, Liz?
I personally thought Matisse won. It was a very close, and I expected a little bit more from Jelena, saying as though she's a very heavy puncher. I think that Matisse was a lot busier and kind of just pressed the fight most of the fight. And to be honest, that knockdown, I mean, it almost looked like she just kind of fell rather than really got knocked down. But, you know, I'm not going to take anything away, but she did fall, but it didn't very seem very devastating. And I thought the fight was close, but I really thought, you know, Matisse pulled it off.
Well, the judges had a little bit wide, at least one of them did, 97-92, and then the two other judges had a 96-93, which was a little bit more accurate. The controversy here is obviously with what Liz is adding to it, is that she saw Soledad win. I actually saw Jelena win. I thought she closed the fight a little bit better. I think she kind of pushed a little bit more and scored the better punches in the second half because Soledad completely controlled the first half. And then with that knockdown, I think that's what made the difference. But there's the controversy. But also the other controversy is that, you know, I think if not all of them, but the majority of the judges were from Canada. And that is something that obviously is not very, you know, very kosher. Because, you know, being that the hometown favorite, Jelena, who is a hometown favorite there in Canada, and the judges being from Canada, I mean, it wasn't a level playing field. And I don't understand why, the WBC or the WBA, for that matter, require for the judges to be from other countries. Because when they fought in Argentina, the judges were from other countries. I think there was one from South Africa and there was one from Central America. So that's a little bit questionable there. So, I mean, if anything, I think Soledad, you know, deserves the rematch, and hopefully we see a third installment in this series.
For sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, okay, so the next – go ahead.
I'm surprised at that, too, because usually Mauricio's Suleiman's usually pretty good about – getting the right judges, making it as fair as possible, especially with the referees. The referee is very important, too.
That is it.
Yeah,
and then
I
also
felt that there. Oh, I'm sorry. I felt that the referee was a little one-sided. I don't really feel like they were evenly, you know, watched by the referee. I felt like he called on Matisse a little too many times without really having a look at Jelena.
Well, Jelena did end up with a pretty nasty gash, and it came from a headbutt. And being that that Soledad was so much shorter than Jelena, you could see her coming in with her head, you know. So maybe that was warranted from the referee. But I believe also that the referee was from Canada also. So you have somewhat of a point there too.
Yeah.
And moving forward, on Saturday, March 12th, the next night, moving farther south with one. Is NAFTA still around? Is Mexico, United States, and Canada still part of NAFTA? I mean, it's not a – yeah, so moving to another NAFTA country, Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, we had the long-reigning WBC super flyweight champion, Zulina La Loba Munoz, defend her title against Ireland's Christina McMahon with a unanimous decision. I also had the opportunity to watch this fight, and I expected more from Christina, being that the fact that she was the one to defeat Catherine Fitti from Africa. And if you guys all know, Catherine Fitti defeated Jasmine Rivas in a shocking surprise fight at the end of January at the WBC Female Convention. So I was expecting a little bit more from her, but I found that Zulina really dominated her in this 10-round, so much so that the fight kind of grew boring in the second half of the fight because it just didn't change and it was the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. And Zulina La Loba Munoz, I mean, if it's not broken, why fix it? So she just did what she needed to do to win that fight, and she did. And Zulina is really, you know, positioning herself as one of the best champions that Mexico has. And I'm going to touch on the other one that I think actually over later on in the fight results that I think has a number one spot. But Zulina has become one of the most solid fighters in Mexico, if not the world, as a world champion. What's your opinion on it, David?
Yeah, it's funny because if you look at her record, she's had pretty easy fights, except for the fight that she lost in Germany. But, you know, she's had pretty easy fights. She never really had really competitive opponent. And then finally she gets it against McMahon, and she just, you know, she, like you said, she dominated. What did you think of McMahon's performance, Liz?
I think that it she could have pushed a little bit harder, but Munoz is just, you know, really, really good and took advantage of McMahon. She took advantage of McMahon coming in forward and lunging at her all the time. And she just went to the body, and she's just very accurate. And I thought it was a really, really good fight.
As far as Munoz's record, I mean, she has an impressive record of 46 wins, one loss, two draws, and 27 knockouts. The lone loss coming to that fight that you mentioned, David, against Alicia Graf back in – the loss actually came back in 2007, but she was able to avenge it back in 2014. She's only 28 years old, so she has a lot of life left in her career. And with 49 fights under her belt, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Yeah, some of her opponents haven't been that great. I've seen her fight live one time at the first female convention, and she fought a girl named Karina Hernandez who had 8 fights with compared to Selena's, you know, over 40 fights. But you know, she faced. What's her name? Gabriela Bouvier from Uruguay, who is not, you know, a world stopper, but she was an IBF champion. She also faced Tenkei Tsunami from Japan, who was 18-6. So I do agree with you that her career, her ledger is not, you know, filled with world stoppers or world beaters. But hopefully, you know, she's starting to get a little bit of traction in Mexico. She's starting to get well-known, and hopefully she starts asking for bigger fights. And even if better so, if she moves up to the bantamweight division and then she starts looking for some fights there, I think it would be pretty impressive. The scorecards in the fight against Christina McMahon in her last fight were 97-94 and 96-94 twice. So it wasn't – I saw it a lot wider than – I didn't see it that close. I thought that Munoz dominated the fight a little bit better than those scorecards actually say.
I did too.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we move on to the week following that, which was Friday, March 18th, and this fight was not televised, but I was present there, and we're just going to go over it real quick. Sandra Robles from Tijuana, the color is La Perla Negra, the Black Pearl. She's a fighter that she's been fighting for about 2 or 3 years. She's really coming along. She made a mistake, in my opinion, in going down to the strawweight title and challenging the number one fighter, according to Bosrec, in that division, who is Anabel Avispa Ortiz. She made the weight and everything, but I think she was a little bit too drained. Plus, she went to the hometown of the champion, which was Mexico City. So going from, you know, Tijuana to the altitude, she was only there about a week prior, if not less. Kind of hurt her in that fight. But other than that, she's been, you know, improving quite well since she went pro, and she had the opportunity to defeat Cecilia Santoscoy in 5 rounds in a fight that she completely dominated. Cecilia from the first round had nothing to do inside the ring with Sandra, and Sandra was able to stop her without a problem. So Sandra, after the fight, mentioned to me that she's really looking for a world title fight in this next year, and she also is looking for a rematch against Anabel Avispa Ortiz. Now that Avispa Ortiz has mentioned that she wants to go up to the 108 pounds, which is more of a division where Sandra wants to be at, even though she's been fighting between 105 and 112. So hopefully you guys get to see her soon. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that fight against Avispa Ortiz, which was late last year, or have you seen anything on YouTube about Sandra? But she's a southpaw. She comes forward. She's pretty aggressive, so I think she's a fighter to watch from Mexico.
That sounds interesting.
I agree.
So Bobby D promoted that fight in Tijuana?
Yes, he did promote. He co-promoted with a promoter from Mexico named Memo Mayen, who actually has Sandra signed to a contract. He also has Brenda Flores signed to a contract, and he has Kenya Enriquez, co-promotes Kenya Enriquez with Bobby D Presents or Bobby D Felipe's. You know, he took a little bit of a hiatus, Memo Mayen, but he is one of the promoters in Mexico, at least in Tijuana or the northern part of Mexico, who has really supported female boxing in the last couple of years. And like I mentioned, the roster that he has, you know, he's done some good things with these three fighters, especially with Kenya Enriquez, but you know, in my opinion, Ken Enriquez really took off and started getting well-known when she started fighting in the U.S. under the Bobby D. Presents banner. And we'll be talking about Kenya and what's coming up for her later on in the show. So moving on to Friday, March 18th, the same day as Sandra Robles gets a technical knockout over Cecilia Santoscoy, Alejandra Jimenez, a heavyweight from Mexico City, took a majority 10-round decision over the defending champion Marta Salazar to capture the WBC heavyweight title. The scores were 98-93, 96-94, and an even 95-95. And if we thought the Jelena Miranovic Soledad Matisse fight was controversial, this one takes the cake. So give me your guys' opinion. Let's start off with Liz. What do you think of this fight?
I thought it was a great fight. And at the end, I just felt like, what fight were they watching? I thought Marta Salazar was amazing to watch. She's a 46-year-old woman and showed that she still had the stamina. She was really slick, and she was a really good counterpuncher. And she didn't, you know, she kept pressing forward. And I thought she won the fight clearly, very clearly.
David?
Yeah,
David?
I absolutely agree with Liz. I thought that she won the fight clearly. I could give Alejandra three rounds, nothing, maybe a fourth, but nothing more than that. I just thought that that Marta was able to hit her with clean punches, that every time Alejandra threw punches, she hit her arms. She hit Marta's arms, and Marta just slipped and blocked and parried, and I didn't see very many clean blows by Alejandra. Once in a while, she would land one, but she took a lot more than she gave, in my opinion.
Definitely.
One thing about Alejandra Jimenez that, you know, is a positive for her is that she was very, very confident going into this fight. They made this fight at the WBC convention. It was a fight that Marta Salazar really wanted to get because she wanted to. She's originally from Jalisco, a state in Mexico, or Guadalajara, that, but I don't believe she's from Guadalajara. But she's lived the majority of her life in the Bay Area, San Francisco area, trains up there. And she really wanted to fight in Mexico, so at the WBC convention this year in January, they met each other and they asked for the fight, and Mauricio put it together with Cancun Boxing, Pepe Gomez, who is a fighter, who is a promoter down in Mexico, who has supported female boxing a lot. And so they made the fight. Alejandra Jimenez, with only five wins, zero losses, with four by the via of knockout, never really fought anybody, nobody. I mean, I don't think any of her opponents have actually had a second fight after they fought her. But here she was, you know, willing to go up into a 10-rounder only after fighting four rounders. And I don't even think she had gone the distance. Actually, she had gone the distance one time. And then she goes up to a 10-rounder, fights a very, very experienced Marta Salazar, and obviously goes the distance. You know, and sometimes in these fights when you have, you know, the hometown favorite, maybe they don't say it out loud, but maybe it's implied that, hey, just make it to the 10th round, here's the final bell, and you're going to get the win, you know. And maybe that's what happened here. I did see a post by Jill Diamond, who is the co-chair of the women's division for the WBC, and she was the supervisor for this fight, that, you know, she sees the controversy. She says that it was boxing, that, you know, it's an objective sport. The way you see it is, you know, different for every person, and that, you know, if they ask for the rematch, then we're sure that they would grant it. But I'm sure that Marta Salazar wants a rematch in the United States. She probably doesn't want to keep on dreaming on the Mexican dream.
Well, you know, it's funny because I thought it was kind of odd that they announced the winner first to the ring, and then Alejandro was second, and I was like, wait a minute, that's kind of a lack of respect that you make the champion come out to the ring first. That's never done. And away, it kind of told me, uh-oh, something's wrong.
Yeah, you know what? That's another thing, too, that I noticed that when in the poster, because they were, you know, they were sharing the poster on Facebook and stuff like that, and they had Marta, Alejandra Jimenez on the left, which is, you know, the reserve for the champion, and her name was on top and stuff like that, which I thought, you know, yeah, she's the hometown favorite. She is promoted by Cancun Boxing and everything, but that's just a lack of respect, and I do agree with you on that, David.
Yeah, without a doubt. Later on, after the fight, I was on Twitter, and Mauricio Suleiman tweeted back that there is probably going to be a rematch. He thought that it was he thought the decision was fair, according to his tweet, but I thought that, you know, I thought the opposite. I thought that Salazar was a much better fighter in that fight. And I mean, to me, it's who hurts more, who hurts the other more. And I thought that Martha just hit her more times.
And, you know, and it showed in her face, because her left eye was, you know, pretty bruised up and swollen. So, I mean, Martha did land punches, you know, and one judge did have it an even fight. But to give Mauricio Suleiman the benefit of the doubt, I mean, he has gone the extra mile, and he did it against, you know, one of the biggest female fighters in Mexico, Mariana the Barbie Juarez, that when a controversial decision was given, I think it was last year against the Argentinian Tabuada, you know, he called out the judges and suspended them and did an investigation, and he demanded for them to have the rematch. So, you know, Mauricio, to a certain extent, he's doing the right thing here. If he believes this fight is fair, then hopefully he orders the immediate rematch, and hopefully they could have it in, you know, somewhere. I mean, I don't know. I mean, why have it in the United States? You couldn't have it in the United States. Maybe they could have it in a little bit more neutral country, somewhere outside of that, but then you would have to find the promoter that would want to do that. Another note on that fight, too, so we could move on, is that this was a historical fight because it was the first time that a female heavyweight title fight was held in Mexico. So that is pretty cool. And it was between two somewhat Mexicans, you know, Alejandra Jimenez from Mexico City and Marta Salazar from Jalisco, but living in the United States. So we move on to the same Friday, but in Finland. We have Eva Wallstrom win a unanimous decision over Diana Santana to defend her WBC super featherweight title. Scores were 99-92, two times in 99-91. I don't suspect that none of us saw that fight. I didn't find any links for it. Did you guys go on there and find any links?
No,
I found no links. Yeah, I looked for that fight, and I couldn't find it either.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting that in – go ahead.
Excuse me. I find it kind of interesting that they only gave her one round. I was like, Diana is a pretty good fighter for her to use everything but one round. I was kind of shocked.
Eva must be pretty dominating, so hopefully we get to see a little bit more of her in a bigger platform. But the interesting thing is, you know, just to go off subject a little bit on the fight results, but, you know, I mean, I've been one, and I know David, and I'm pretty sure Liz, because, I mean, you were a fighter at one point, and you decided to leave the sport leave your professional career because you didn't feel that female boxing was getting, you know, enough action. But here we are. We're talking about fights in Finland. We're talking about fights in Mexico. We're talking in fights about in Canada. There is female fights out there. There is female boxing. It's not as much as the male boxing, obviously, but – you know, it's starting to get some traction. It's starting to get some traction. And hopefully, you know, hopefully this show and other shows and websites, you know, it starts building up and building up, and people start seeing that female boxing is as competitive and as good as the male boxing. And hopefully we start seeing a lot more of it, you know, in compiling these fight results and compiling the upcoming calendars. Obviously, we don't put everything on here. We put the biggest things that we feel that is going to be the most interesting thing to talk about. But in compiling them, I start seeing there's fights in Hungary, there's fights in Ukraine. I mean, I saw a fight card in Hungary that had about eight fights, and like four or five of them were female fights. You know, in Japan, they had an all-female fight card. And then we're going to talk about another fight card that's coming up pretty soon that it's all female. So there is female boxing out there. And you know, it's just a matter of finding it and supporting it and talking about it that I think is going to help build the sport.
Well, it's always been known that in Europe and in other countries, female boxing has always been quite big, not as big as men. But they've very supportive, but for some reason it just hasn't been the same in the U.S. There's always been, you know, when you're in the amateurs, you hear that there's fights every weekend in Germany. You hear that there's fights every weekend, you know, in certain parts of the world. And those countries have really big powerhouses. So, you know, in the amateurs, so those women, eventually they go pro, And they have plenty of fights, but for some reason here in the U.S., it gets pushed a little bit, and, you know, they might try to find an angle, but it doesn't really get the support that it gets in the other countries. It just doesn't. And it's a shame because we have a lot of talent here that I kind of feel doesn't get the recognition worldwide. And, you know, we don't want to see, you know, when we go to other countries where, you know, we might not get fights. The judges might not see the fight in our favor and things like that, where, you know, if it was everywhere, it would be a lot better for women.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, the competition would be crazy. And the most interesting part, before we get back to the fight results, to me, and what's always been kind of interesting to me, but also kind of dumbfounding, which I don't understand, is that, you know, Mexico is, you know, a machoist country. You know, the women is expected to stay home and take care of the kids. And in Japan, the woman is expected to be submissive to the Japanese man and everything. But, and then also South America and all that. And that's where you have a lot of boxing. You have a ton of boxing in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You have a ton of female boxing in Mexico. And then in
Europe, which is more progressive,
you know, Europe compared to Mexico or Japan, perhaps in culturally in that sense, you have a lot of female boxing as well. So that's the part that I find very interesting because, I mean, I watch all the female boxing that goes around in Mexico, and it's not a joke. It's not something like, oh, look at these little girls with their braids on and their skirts punching each other out. It's funny. No, it's taken very, very seriously. And when these female fights happen, like Barbie Juarez and Jackie Nava and Ana Maria Torres, it's the main event on a major major television network that is free. It's like NBC or it's ABC in Mexico. It's Televisa and Azteca, and it's terrestrial, and it's the main event. I mean, the guys are fighting in the co-main event when it's like a big name like Jackie Nava or Barbie Juarez, and it's in Mexico where, you know, they're supposed to stay home barefoot and pregnant. So I find that very interesting and very dumbfounding that why the United States has not embraced female boxing again, because they did at one point. David, tell me if I'm wrong. It used to be on ESPN.
Right. You're right. It's just one of those things that right now we have the powers in boxing don't like women's boxing or don't believe in it. And yet you have MMA, and they brought Ronda Rousey, and all of a sudden women's fighters just exploded in MMA. I mean, they surpass female boxing by far in terms of viewership, in terms of money, in terms of attention. And it's sad because the female boxers are still superior. I mean, we still have all that experience in the U.S. In fact, when we talk to other women fighters from around the world, they all look toward the U.S. and say, those are the girls we want to fight to prove ourselves, because they know they're the best. And but the American women, they just can't get any recognition. It's a sad.
And Holly Holm, before her fight, in her last fight in the UFC, she even stated, you know, where was the boxing media when I was a boxer? Where was all this media when I was a boxer? You know,
yeah.
She actually had a jump. She had to jump to MMA to get, Jesus, not even, I mean,
yeah,
triple the recognition that she got as a boxer.
Yeah, she never got the recognition or the attention or the exposure. And that's really what it is. You know, it's exposure.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be people need to be able to see us. And for some reason, you know, they don't believe in women. I mean, and in saying they, it's a very big group. They don't want to put us on fights. They don't, you know, a lot of managers don't want to manage women. I mean, some do, but a lot of them don't. They just, they say there's no money in it. And you just kind of get pushed to the side. And it's really unfortunate because there's so many women that are so much better than men. So it's just kind of feel like it's a loss because there's so many women that are much more exciting to watch than some of the bum guys that are out there. I mean, that sounds horrible, but there's a lot of guys out there that are bums. And the women that are getting the same amount of money are, in comparison, their fights are much more exciting. You know, they're super fast paced, and it's a shame.
That's
you know,
amazing.
This is going to be an ongoing theme or discussion here. We're not here to complain. I'm not a female fighter. You know, I just love female fights. But I'm not here to complain, and I'm not here to get on a soapbox. But this conversation is going to be an ongoing conversation on this program, because this is why we started this show, is so we could give female fights and female boxers a little bit more exposure, because we think they deserve it. And I totally agree with Liz that, you know, I've seen hundreds of female fights and thousands of male fights live on TV, on tape, and the percentage of times that I've been bored in a female fight has been very, very low compared to a male fight. I mean, girls, for one reason or another, I think it's their, I don't know if there's competitive, it's their will to win. They don't give up as easy, honestly. Even when they're a quote-unquote opponent and they're there to, you know, or they're at a disadvantage, they still give it their all, whereas male opponents in general, quote-unquote, you know, when there is a disadvantage weight-wise, or they didn't get called, you know, with enough time to take the fight or whatever they may be, you know, they're more willing to take that knee or stay on that stool. And for some reason, one thing I haven't seen all that much is females are not willing to do that very often.
No, I think that you've got to fight so hard just to have the opportunity to have a fight that, you know, you're going to give it your all no matter what. And, you know, women are emotional. And in saying that, it doesn't mean that they're weenies or that they're weak.
Sorry to interrupt you, Liz. Continue that thought, but I just want to say the person on this show that said that women were emotional was the woman. I don't want to get tweets later saying that we're being feminist, sexist.
No, well, what I was going to say is with women being emotional, you know, we get angry and we want to let stuff out and we do get competitive, and those are emotions as well. I'm not saying, you know, we want to cry or, you know, things like that. What I'm saying is a fight to us is very important. We love it. We love to fight. We're very competitive. And so even if it's just, you know, a fight that you just picked up, you know, women are always going to give it their all. We're very hardworking. We train really hard. And so, you know, whenever you get an opportunity, you're trying to show people every time women can fight. And in most, and I don't want to say in most cases, but in a lot of cases, much better than guys in the smaller, you know, maybe like venues and stuff like that. Women fight very hard and they're very entertaining to watch.
One of the entertaining fights this past couple of weeks was Saturday, March 19th from Buenos Aires. The Argentinian Anaís Sánchez forced Areti Mastroduca's corner to throw in the towel in the sixth round to capture the vacant IBF super featherweight title. Again, another fight that wasn't all that exposed, but another country, a big country in female fighting, Buenos Aires, and now they have a new IBF super featherweight title. And that's something that we have seen a lot lately too, is the bigger weight classes too are starting to get a little bit more action. The super featherweights, the heavyweights, the welterweights. So with Cecilia Breakhouse in the welterweight division. So hopefully we're going to start getting a lot more divisions to be represented across the world in female boxing and have more competition in female boxing as far as the weight division. And moving on to the last fight result that we have, Saturday, March 19th from Metepec, Mexico, Promociones del Pueblo, who is a promoter down in Mexico who has a lot of dates on the Televisa network, which is the biggest network in Mexico, and who has a lot of female fighters under their banner, Mariana Barbie Juarez, Kika Chavez, Pequeña Lulu, Lourdes Juarez, and quite a number of others, put on in the main event on Televisa, like I mentioned before, in the biggest network in Mexico, their junior flyweight WBC champion, Yvette La Roca Zamora, who stopped Japanese Mari Ando in six rounds. She defended her title for the sixth time, and she has defended this title against some pretty big names. And that's why when I was talking about Solina Munoz, I said there was another Mexican fighter who I believe is the cream of the crop in Mexico, and that is Yvette La Roca Zamora, who has defended her title six times and has defended it against big names. So did you get a chance to watch this fight, David? And if so, what do you think of it?
I think La Roca is a really good fighter. I mean, Zamora, she gets it, you know. She knows what it takes to win. She's a pressure fighter. She's just one of the best. She's one of the best out there right now. Pound for pound, she's one of the best. Pretty close to the top. I guess she caught everybody's attention when she beat Ava Knight, because that shocked the world. Because Ava Knight is a much bigger woman, was dropping down, and when was that? 2 years ago, when they fought.
That was in 2013.
Yeah. I mean, that win kind of made everybody look at her, and since then she's just been showing that it was no fluke. She's just a dominating fighter. And I saw this fight against Ando, and she's just too much for that weight class. She has to move up. She's already proven that there's nobody there at that weight class that can handle her.
Well, let me give you her run. She captured the vacant WBC title against Naoko Shibata in Japan, winning a split decision. Then she defended it against Maricela Quintero, pretty good fighter, kind of aggressive, not too technical, but tough, beat her. Making her not come out for the eighth round. And then she beat Ava Knight with a unanimous decision. She defeated Judith, well, actually, she didn't defend against Judith Rodriguez, so it doesn't count. And then she defeated Jessica Kika Chavez, who now is a WBC flyweight champion. Then she defended against Jolene Blackshear, a fighter that David and I, and I'm sure Liz knows pretty well, not a natural junior flyweight, much smaller than La Roca Zamora, but still a very, very tough fighter and tough competitor, and she stopped her in seven. Then she won a unanimous decision against a very experienced fighter in Esmeralda La Joya Moreno, and then she defended it again this past Saturday against Mari Ando. Now, as far as moving up, I know I mentioned it in the last show, she was here at the WBC convention in January, and she did mention that she wants to move up to the flyweight division and challenge Kika Chavez for that title, for the WBC title. But Mauricio Suleiman had some different thoughts regarding that. He wants to create a tournament in the flyweight division that would include the champion Kika Chavez, that would include Ives La Roca Zamora, the WBO champion Melissa McMorrow, Ava Knight, the silver titleist Raja Amashe, and a couple other ones. With guaranteed purses, all the fights on TV, and the winner takes the diamond belt. By the looks of what she was saying at the convention, it didn't look like La Roca Zamora was very interested in being part of that tournament. She wanted a direct shot at Kika Chavez. So let's see what happens. Let's see if Mauricio forces her to be in a tournament to get her shot, or he caves in and gives her the direct shot at her and then moves on. Did you get a chance to watch this fight, Liz?
I did. It's a really good fight. She's just very strong for her size. She's really strong. I mean, all her punches have a lot of power. She's really good at defense. She blocks really good. And she's just very strong, and she's really good, and she's really accurate. Yeah, it was a really good fight.
Yeah, I think she's the most solid champion that Mexico has right now, and I agree with Dave that, you know, technically she doesn't look like all that much, but she has a lot of experience and she knows what she's doing inside that ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't come from a very known trainer or stable. Actually, Kika Chavez is actually trained by Nacho Beristain, so you would have to give her the edge on that part, but then she ended up beating her. You know, she ended up beating Kika Chavez, and it was in the state of Mexico where both of them are from, so you couldn't say that it was favoritism. So, you know, she's a very solid fighter, you know, and I agree with David that it's time for her to move up, because I think she has done everything that she needs to do in the junior flyweight division, unless Jessica Latuti Bob from Argentina, who looks to be coming back in April, decides to come to Mexico and challenge her and puts up her titles. Because I don't know if she's going to get a champion in recess type of thing and win her titles back. Because I know when she retired or when she went maternity leave, she was like a WBO, WBA champion or something like that. So that's a fight where I think La Roca Zamora can make some money, you know, and then move up to flyweight. But let's see what happens. What do you think about that that situation or that fight if it comes to fruition, David?
That would be an interesting fight, but I would think that Jessica Chavez wants first crack at her or something. But I could see where they'd make money off that. But where would they fight that, in Mexico or in Argentina?
I would find it hard for La Roca Zamora to want to go down in Argentina, because you got to knock the girl out to get a draw down there. So
exactly.
You know, so, and then she doesn't need to go down there. I mean, she's the darling of the Mexican TV and Mexican female boxing. I mean, right now, I mean, unless her name is Mariana Barbie Juarez or Jackie Nava, who obviously is not fighting right now because she's a congresswoman, and Ana Maria Torres has it doesn't seem like she wants to come back. You know, I don't think there's a bigger name in female boxing than La Roca Zamora other than Barbie Juarez in Mexico.
Yeah, absolutely. She's right there now. She's made a name for herself. There's no reason for her to go to Argentina unless they give her $1 million.
Definitely happens. And that concludes the first section of our show, which is the fight results. And I urge you people, if you want to give us a call and give us a comment, a question, or anything, 347-215-7598, 347-215-7598. This is the 2-minute round on the Leave It in the Ring Network, the 2-minute round, your hook and jabs on the female fight worth with myself, Felipe León, David Avila, and Liz Quevedo Parr. So now we're going to move on to female fight chatter, where we're going to give you a little bit of news and notes regarding what's going on. The first thing that was announced a couple of weeks ago was that the coal miner's daughter, Christy Martin, is going to be inducted into the Nevada Hall of Fame. Now, they are, I think, saying that she is the first woman to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, but David was going to do a little bit of homework and see if it's actually Elena Reed. But I don't think it is, David, because the Nevada Hall of Fame only has a couple of years, and I don't think I've heard Elena Reed mentioned by them beforehand. So I think it might be Christy Martin.
Yeah, maybe it is. I think it is, because I couldn't find anything else that said otherwise. But, Christy, she's one of the women that really, really brought the female boxing to the forefront. I mean, she's the one that was televised, and people liked her style. And, she just recently retired a couple of years ago. But she's now living in Las Vegas, and, it's well-deserved for Christy.
You know, I think Christy, and then Liz, you could give us your opinion on Christy, but I think Christy is that one female fighter, the first female fighter who was respected truly as a female fighter, as a real female fighter. I mean, I'm not going to name any names. I don't want to insult anybody, but there's been a lot of fighters out there, female fighters that have used their female stuff, per se, to get popular and stuff like that, and not taking away from their boxing skills or anything like that, but they do get popular more for their looks, perhaps, and the way that they display those looks than their actual skill. And then you got these other female fighters who actually go out there and really fight, and I think that Christy Martin is one of those fighters. I mean, she fought everybody. She went up in weight. She fought, Layla Ali, she fought Mia St. John, she fought Holly Holm, she fought everybody. She was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, she was on pay-per-views. She did it all before we all knew what all was in the female fight world. So if anybody deserves to be at least the first inductee into the Nevada Hall of Fame, I think it's Christy Martin.
Yeah, she definitely deserves it. You know, she was under some really big fights. You know, she was on the undercards of Mike Tyson, and it was probably one of the first times that a lot of people saw women's boxing. I mean, I think it's been around for a really long time, but she was at the forefront, and she totally deserves it. Another fighter at the time that was really big was also Lucia Riker, and she was really big and, you know, didn't really get a lot of, maybe exposure. But she was really good too. It's really well deserved.
And that fight was actually never made. They were supposed to fight, and they had a little bit of a fisticuff.
That's right.
Before her fight with Belinda Laracuente, where they actually met each. Actually, I think Christy Martin was having an open media workout in LA, and Lucia Riker showed up out of the blue, and they had words. and then they threw some punches, and the Belinda Larenguente fight, which was against Christy Martin, which was under the Felix Trinidad David Reed pay per view from Las Vegas, almost fell out because Christy Martin ended up hurting her hand in that little scuffle with Lucille Riker, and that fight was actually never made between Christy Martin and Lucille Riker. So Christy Martin being inducted on June 30th is the ceremony. If you guys are in Vegas or nearby, you guys want to see that, I'm sure you could buy the tickets. You could find it on the internet. The next note here is Ava Knight, through her Instagram account, announces her next fight, which is scheduled for April 23rd in Los Mochis, Mexico. I actually had the opportunity to speak to Ava Knight at the second WBC convention in January here in Tijuana. And she mentioned to me that she's going to be working with Promociones del Pueblo, that promoter that I mentioned earlier that has a lot of dates in Mexico. That promotional company was a promoter on record some years ago, but the contract ended, and now she's working with them on a fight-by-fight basis. She was signed to Greg Cohen some months ago, and she was supposed to fight. She ended up doing a fight, I think, under the Greg Cohen banner in Washington, D.C. It was not televised, and then she was going to fight on TV on a Greg Cohen CBS Sports Network fight date, but then the opponent fell out, and then I don't know what happened with Greg Cohen, but it looks like she's been released from that contract, and now she's going to be fighting on a fight-by-fight basis with Promociones del Pueblo, and this will be her second fight in that with that agreement. Her first fight was, you know, when was that? Let me look it up real quick. It was on February 20th in a draw against Yasiet Noriega in a fight that we decided, David, that it wasn't the best Ava Knight we had seen, but she was shaking off 2-year ring rust, you know. So now she's going to have her opportunity against Judith Rodriguez, whose record is 8 wins, 9 losses, 5 knockouts, and she's the former WBC Silver Super Flyweight Champion. But that fight's April 23rd, and there's a couple other fights happening on April 23rd, so it's going to be a very busy Saturday. And I don't know if this fight's going to be overshadowed by those two other fights. David, why don't you give us a little bit of the rundown of the two other fights happening on April 23rd?
Well, on April 23rd at the Forum, under the Triple G versus Dominic Wade fight, and Chocolatito fighting, who is it, Arroyo?
Yeah, McWilliams Arroyo.
There's going to be two female fights. One of them is Kenya Enriquez fighting Amaris Quintana of San Diego. That's a border fight right there. I mean, those girls have known each other for a long time. They're both solid, solid fighters. Enriquez is a former WBO flyweight champion, and Amaris is the NABF junior flyweight title holder. That's going to be a really, really good fight. It's an 8-round bout, and then that's going to be also just one of two female fights. The other female fight is Denisa Estrada of East L.A. fighting Celine Gomez of Mexico. And both female fights are junior flyweight bouts, and I know one of them is an 8-round fight. I guess that's Enriquez versus Quintana. I'm not sure about Denisa Estrada and Celine Lopez, if it's 6-0.
And I think that's a 6-rounder.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, all eyes are going to be on that fight card because of the, not just because of Triple G, but two female fights on a big card like that. I expect that place to be sold out. They had
in
already
the United
sold
States.
About, exactly. In Inglewood, which is a suburb of Los Angeles, it's going to be a big fight, a big opportunity for people to see women. And from what I've been told, last time we had the show, we had Tom Loeffler on, and he said they're going to try and stream all the fights so that everybody around the world will have the opportunity to see the two female fights on that card on April 23rd.
That's awesome. And I think I saw a note that they're going to be releasing some new tickets. I guess they opened up a little bit more of the Forum the way they had to do with the StubHub Center when Golovkin fought there, where they put those stands on top. I don't imagine them doing this at the Forum, but I think they're going to open up more seats, and they're going to be as low as $30. So that place is going to be packed. You're going to have two female two very competitive female fights on April 23rd, and Ava fighting on TV. I'm sure we're going to be able to find the link somewhere after that. So tell us, Liz, do you know anything about these four females that are going to be fighting on April 23rd at the LA Forum? And then we'll go back to David, because I know he just put up a great article on Amariz Quintana, and then we can talk about that also.
I'm familiar with Sanisa. You know, I watched her. We were in the amateurs, but I don't want to say together because she was a lot younger than I was, and I watched her coming up. And I saw her have some really, really good fights. So the experience that she has is going to be very, very exciting to watch. And I'm not quite familiar with the other girls, to be honest, but I'm very excited to watch Sanisa fight for sure.
Well, Sanisa Estrada is going to be facing a young woman by from Los Mochis, Mexico, but residing in Mexicali. Her name is Selena Lopez. It's going to be her first fight in the United States. Her sister is Carely Lopez, who is she holds a smaller world title, but she has challenged for the IBF title in Japan. I think it was earlier this year or last year. But Selena Lopez has the unique distinction of having she would now, on April 23rd, when she gets out of the ring with Sanisa Estrada, she would have faced everybody, all the female fighters on that card. She would fight. She would face Sanisa Estrada on April 23rd. She fought Amariz Quintana last year in Amariz Quintana's last fight. Amariz Quintana was able to defeat her with a unanimous 8-round decision. I believe it was a unanimous decision. And back in 2014, Kenny Enriquez stopped her in about a minute. So she's experienced. You know, her record stands right now at 3 wins, 4 losses, 3 draws, 1 knockout. But those losses have come against very, very tough fighters. You know, I mean, her losses have come to Kenny Enriquez. Her other loss came to Isabel Millan, who is a world title holder. Not a major world title, but one of those titles out there. Tania Enriquez, Kenya's sister, also went 10 rounds with her. Very tough. And then Amariz Quintana. So those losses haven't come against, you know, easy mm-hmm. fights. They come against tough fights. So I think that Sinisa Estrada is going to have a little bit of her hands full with Selena Lopez. But we know that Sinisa is very athletic and she has a lot of skill. But I think this is really Sinisa's first real test in her young career, even though she's been fighting since 2012, right, David?
Since earlier, 2011, I think.
Yeah, 2011 was her first fight.
Yeah, so she has 5 fights, I believe. And,
yeah.
You know, and she's had 2 of her fights were against Blanca Raimundo, and then she fought Maria Ruiz, and then she fought Carly Beatty, and then she just defeated in her last fight a pro debuter by the name of Maria Andaverde. And now I think, honestly, with what I've seen from Sinisa and from Selene, it's going to be a good test. And then obviously in the fight that David mentioned, Kenny Enriquez against Amariz Quintana, a fight that has been spoken about a lot here in San Diego. Bobby has been asked about. Bobby has had the opportunity to promote both of their fights for a long time. He did a lot of Amariz's fights, and he's done a lot of Kenya's fights. And he had been asked plenty of times to make this fight, but Bobby just didn't. Bobby just said, you know, why do it? Why put these two girls there from here? You know, they're popular. They're from San Diego. They're from Tijuana. And why do it here? Let's try to do it. If we're going to do it, let's try to do it in a bigger platform. And well, he found it with Tom Loeffler on this big show. And Amariz Quintana touches on that subject in your recent article, David. Why don't you tell us what Amariz had to say about why she decided to take the fight and why on this big show?
Well, when she heard that it was going to be in the Triple G card, one of the fighters she really admires, she just jumped at it. She didn't even hesitate. She said, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. I have to take it. You know, I want to take it, she said, because she knows that all eyes are going to be on this fight card and that women don't get these opportunities too many times. And she's really happy to be a part of it. She's not only happy for herself, but also for the other 3 women that are fighting, because she knows how difficult it is to get on a big fight card, just on any fight card. They can't even get it on the small fight cards, let alone the big one.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's try to get her on our next show. Our next show is scheduled for April 7th. We have the two-minute round is every 2 weeks here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. So let's try to have a Maris on April 7th, see if we get Siniesa or Kenya as well. And then we'll try to talk to him here live on the show. So let's try to do that for our next show scheduled for April 7th. And prior to that April 23rd fight, we're actually going to have a pretty good, huge female fight card from New Zealand on April 16th. And the fights featured on that fight card and down under is going to be Ronica Jeffrey versus Gentiani Lupi for the vacant WBC silver featherweight title. We also have Melissa St. Ville versus Baby Nansen for the vacant WBC super featherweight title. Then we have Callie Reese versus Maricela Cornejo. Is Maricela Cornejo from California, David? I think she is, right?
I don't know if she's from California, but she's training here. She's training at Azteca Gym right now. And
okay.
She's been there for
a little while. Have you had a chance to look at her? Have you had a chance to look at her there at the Azteca Gym?
I haven't seen her train yet. She's a big girl, big, solid girl. She looks very athletic. I haven't seen her train, though. So I haven't been able to see what kind of skills she has. I've seen her on video. She seems to be a very strong girl. And
I've seen the video, and she looks like she's doing some good things.
Yeah, but she's such a tough girl. That Kelly Reese is a good fighter too. Is she from Rhode Island, Kelly Reese?
Well, Cornejo is from Washington, from the state of Washington, and yes, Kelly Reese is from Providence, Rhode Island. So actually, whoever this promoter is, and we should do a little bit more investigating and talk about him in the next show. I mean, he's flying in some people to New Zealand. I mean, he has a fight between Callie Reese, who's from the Rhode Island, USA, and Maricela Cornejo, who is from Washington, the state of Washington, but training in L.A. He's flying them in. Then he also has Noemi Bosquez from Florida against Michelle Preston in a non-title 8-rounder, and Mia St. John versus Lisa Lewis in a 4-rounder. And it looks, I don't know if Mia St. John has actually officially announced it, but I think I saw a little bit of chatter, a little bit of Twitter talk that this might be her last fight, that she's actually retiring after this fight, and it's only a 4-rounder. So this might be the last time we might get a chance, whether they're streaming it. I'm sure they're going to be streaming it. It looks like a pretty huge promotion. We might be able to see Mia St. John inside a ring.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been she's talked about retiring for many, many years. In fact, I even recall doing a retirement story about 4 or 5 years ago. But she always came back. She couldn't say no to the money. And you know how it is. If you fought your whole life and that's, you know, your job, it's kind of hard to just say no to that job when that's what you really done all your life, you know. And we'll see if she retires. I haven't spoken to her recently, but I'll give her a call and see what she's going to do, if she is going to retire or not. What do you think, Liz, about that female card?
I think it sounds great. I think it's going to be really good for women's boxing, and I think there should be a lot more all female cards.
Yeah, for some time it was kind of like the novelty thing of having these all female fights. I mean, I've seen postings and stuff like that on Facebook where, you know, we had all these female fighters fighting on one card. And actually, Guillermo Mayen, who did that co-promotion with Bobby D a couple weeks ago or a week ago, he actually held two. He would do one a year and he actually only ended up doing two of them where they would be all female fights. And the first one was all females. The trainers, you know, the trainers would work the corners, the original trainers, but the one going in and giving the instructions were females. They just did all the corners. The doctor was a female. The announcer was a female. Jackie Nava was an honorary commissioner, so she was supervising the fights. So it was actually the judges were all female, and that happened in TJ back in like 2000. I don't remember if it was 2013 or 2012, 2013. It was pretty interesting. So we're starting to see a little bit again, and hopefully – with the April 23rd show with the two female fights that we talked about on the Triple G card. And then this one in New Zealand, we start seeing it a little bit more. So that is the female fight chatter for this second edition of the 2 Minute Round on the Leave It in the Ring Network. And now we're going to introduce a new section that we were trying to do last show, but with our co-host Liz not being able to be on with us, we're going to introduce it for this show. It's called Quevedo's Corner, where we're going to be talking about different themes in female boxing. So why don't you give us the first theme, and we'll have a quick discussion regarding it, and then we can move on to the last part, the last segment of this, the 2 Minute Round.
Well, the theme is regarding whether pro female fighters should be fighting 2 Minute Rounds or 3 Minute Rounds, and pros and cons. I actually have no cons whatsoever. I feel that fighting is fighting, and there should be no difference whatsoever regarding women and men. I just don't see that, you know, it's women work just as hard and they fight just as hard. And I don't think that the fight game is any harder on our body than it is on a man's body. And we can keep up. And I think that, you know, now that New York, I believe, has accepted the 3 Minute Round. Recently, there was the first 3 Minute fight, and it went well. So I just don't see what the problem is, or why, you know, what's the difference? You know, women can fight 3 minutes just fine.
Yeah, this is David. Also, a few years back, Layla McCarter, by the way, who's fighting in April 16th in Mexico City against Yolanda Segura. Layla McCarter had a 3 minute fight she was defending, I think it was a GBU title, lightweight title. And then she tried to, when she won the IBF title, she was trying to have them do the 3 minute round. And one reason I'm in favor of it is because I think they'll get more knockouts with that extra minute. And when you're only 2 minutes, sometimes, you know, people can go full speed for 2 minutes, but they can't for 3 minutes. Just like the guys, a lot of your knockouts come at the end of the round, toward the end of the round, not at the beginning, not too many. And I think that if females went to 3 minutes, they'd see a lot more knockouts. And let's be frank, most people want to see knockouts. They don't like to always see decisions. They want to see knockouts. And girls don't have as many because, in my opinion, 2 minutes is not enough time.
Well, I want to play devil's advocate. Well, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Liz.
I don't think that it's enough time, especially in a championship fight. You know, some of them do women go 12 rounds in
no.
a championship
10
fight?
Rounds in a championship, 10 rounds in a championship fight.
Yeah. I mean, why? They can go 12. They should be able to go 12 rounds, 3 minutes. It's a championship fight, and people need to get women need to get that work in. You know, even if it's a 4-round fight, an extra minute can make a difference between a close fight and a fight that someone could obviously win. You know, you in 2 minutes goes by so fast that, you know, maybe some women could be slow starters in a round and finish the round really hard if they're used to sparring for 3 minutes. So I just really, really, really think that a 3 minute round is the best bet.
When you were fighting the amateurs, Liz, was it 2 minutes or 3 minutes?
It was 2 minutes.
Well, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here because you guys both agree. And what I've seen and what I've heard in the conventions, this has been a running theme in the two female conventions that we've had. And they've shown studies because the WBC was heavily considering changing their policy with the 2 minute and the 3 minute round. And I'm not a doctor, and I haven't done this research. I'm only giving you what I've sat for in these seminars. And they're basically saying that women's bodies, the stamina they're saying stamina-wise, it's not good for females to fight 12 rounds or 10 or 3 minute rounds because of the way that the stamina of the female body or whatever the case may be. That's why they give a good, a solid argument of why it should say 2 minutes versus the 3 minutes as far as the WBC convention is concerned. And if somebody's listening or somebody listens to the show later on in the podcast and could give us a better understanding of it or a better argument of why the stamina portion of it is why they were discussing that on the WBC convention, feel free to contact us on our Twitter account or on our Facebook. It's facebook.com/ 2 minute round, or, you know, on Twitter at SD Fights. That's my Twitter handle. And then David, yours is at Avila Boxing.
Correct.
Avila. Liz, do you have Twitter?
I don't have Twitter.
You should get Twitter, Liz. Come on, Liz. It's 2016. Social media. And then,
Felipe. Oh, one thing is that, what about female MMA? They got 5 minute rounds.
Yeah,
there you go.
What about that?
Yeah, so I mean, that's why I said I wasn't a doctor and I didn't say I had all the facts, and that's why I'd rather have somebody call in and give us the facts. But the other, but here's what I do know, and this is what I do can hold fast, is that I agree with you, 3 minute rounds and it's not enough time. But the fact that it's 2 minute rounds, I think we see more action because they know they can't take any time off and they know they have to go out there and do as much damage as they can in those 2 minute rounds. And I think that's why we see a little bit more action in a female fight than in a male fight, you know, because in a 3 minute male fight, the guy knows that maybe I could take the first minute off or the first minute and a half and then close strong, where in a female fight, they have to fight for those 2 minutes if they want to win that round, you know. And that's one thing that some female fighters have told me, you know, that they do like the 2 minute round because they feel that it's a shorter time and they're going to see more action and they have to start faster. There's no, you know, slow starts in female fights. So that is one thing that I agree with as far as that is concerned. But, you know, I see the other aspect of it, the things that Liz said and David said, where, you know, we will see more knockouts. And, you know, and make it more equal to the male boxing.
Yeah, and you would also see a little bit more, you know, if they could slow down a little bit, then you might see a difference between somebody with a lot of experience and somebody with not as much experience. So I
that's
think that's what makes a really big difference. You know, if you know, it's kind of like any fight, if it's two minutes, people are just going to come out swinging, you know, and just action. Women want to show that we can fight. We learn everything that guys do, and we can move just as good as they can. We can slip, we can go under, we can do everything. We can do everything that they can do. And with those 2 minutes, I feel that it limits women to do that. Of course, you can still see it. It's 2 minutes, but I feel that with 3 minutes, women would be able to settle down a little bit more and really, really show their skills. I mean, I just feel that we don't get enough credit for what we can actually do. The people in the gym, they see it, but the world and people here in the U.S., they really need to be able to see that too.
I agree.
Good point. Now, David, just close off the discussion. When Layla McArthur fought Delphine Persoon on the BKB, on that boxing pay-per-view that they had some, was it last year? Were those 3 minute rounds or 2 minute rounds?
I think there were 3 minute rounds. I think they were.
Yeah,
they were,
I think so
rounds.
Too. And it was pretty exciting. We saw a lot of action there, you know.
Yeah.
And I agree with Liz. Brought up that good point, and you're starting to sway me more towards the 3 minute round because now we can see the women establish a strategy because, like I say, the 2 minute, they have to go out there and just score punches, whereas here they might start building a little bit more of a game plan when they know they have a little bit more time. And like you said, we'll be able to see a little bit more skill coming from them, especially in the 10-round championship fights.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not going to declare the 2 minute round as pro 3 minutes just yet. I do want to get somebody to talk to us about that stamina issue. And if they don't convince us, then we're going to declare the 2 minute round, the 2 minute round podcast, a pro 3 minute round podcast. So we're going to table that this discussion for a later date when we could get an expert to tell us about that stamina thing. And with that said, we move on to the last section of our show. We're almost out of here in the 2 minute round. Your female boxing podcast here on the Live It in the Ring Network. Like I mentioned, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. I'm Felipe León with my co-host David Avila and Liz Quevedo Parr. And our next show is going to be on April 7th here on the Live It in the Ring Network at 6 p.m. Pacific time. So the upcoming calendar, not much to talk about, folks. Not major fights happening in the next couple of weeks, but we are looking to a huge April. Like I mentioned, like we mentioned, we have the Kenny Enriquez against Amaris Quintana fight and Sinés Estrada against Selena Lopez on April 23rd at the LA Forum. We have Ava Knight fighting Judith Rodriguez the same night in Los Mochis. And then we have that huge New Zealand fight with Mia St. John, Noemi Bosquez, Maricela Cornejo, Callie Reese, and a couple other more fights on that. So we have a huge April coming up. But in the next couple of weeks, on Sunday, March 27th, from South Korea, Hyun Mi Choi will be facing Diana Ayala for the WBA Super Featherweight title. Funny thing is that on BoxRec, when I saw this on BoxRec, it says a fight card was unsanctioned, but it is for a WBA Super Featherweight title. So I don't know if there's going to be a commission there or what's going to be going on. Let's see what happens. Let's see if they even hold the fight card. But as far as the schedule is concerned, it is programmed for March 27th, Sunday, in South Korea. Hyun Mi Choi defending her WBA Super Featherweight title against Diana Ayala. And on Wednesday, March 30th, at the B.B. King's Blues Bar and Grill in New York City, Cindy Serrano, the sister of Amanda Serrano, will be facing the dreaded Tiffany Bob Anderson in a super bantamweight bout in a six round. So real quickly, David, can you give us the difference between Cindy and Amanda Serrano style-wise, or Liz, if you know more about them?
I don't.
Amanda's a little more boxer-puncher, and Cindy is more of a pressure fighter, in my opinion. But Amanda's more of a boxer-puncher. She has all the she likes to use her jab, and when she hurts you, I mean, she's a good finisher. She really packs a big punch, I think bigger than her sister. And
this is Cindy you're talking about or Amanda? Cindy?
Amanda is the one that has the – Amanda has the punch. Cindy is
the punch?
Fighter.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they're getting a little bit of traction out there in New York. Obviously, Amanda Serrano captured the WBO featherweight title about a month ago there in the same venue with the first-round knockout. And now we have her sister against a TBA, Tiffany Bob Anderson. What would be a good name? Tiffany Bethany Anderson. That's what it is. Tiffany Bethany Anderson is – the opponent for Cindy Serrano in a six-rounder super bantamweight on March 30th in New York City. And with that, my friends, we have come to the end of the second episode of the two-minute round, your look into female boxing, hooks and jabs, jabs and hooks into the female boxing world. Our next show is going to be on April 7th here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, 6 p.m. Pacific time. Catch us on our Twitter. Liz, we already established she does not have one. Hopefully by April 7th, she does have one. David, tell her, show her how to do it. And then my Twitter account, at SDFights, S as in San, D as in David, Fights. And then we have the one and only Mr. David Avila at Avila Boxing. Closing thoughts, my friends, before we get out of here.
Give us a three-minute round, damn it. That's what I want.
Yeah, what she said.
Okay, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time, April 7th, 6 p.m. Pacific time. Catch us facebook.com/2-minute round.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.